evening, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of 80s horror films. It's a brand new season too. It's the second season. Woo-hoo. So I'm really excited because this is going to be definitely a 10 episode season, and hopefully we'll be able to do it every month, like, you know, or whatnot. Might have to bank a few certain months in order to make sure we, you know, we got some, but we'll get them for you guys.
And we've got some good ones planned.
Oh yeah. I've already showed her mine. She hasn't even told me hers yet, so I have no idea what
Yeah, I did.
Did you?
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right.
I sent them to you immediately. You're gonna have to go back and look because I don't remember.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
we'll figure it out.
Yeah. Well, no, I have them listed in my notes, so I know which ones mine are. I'll have to look back at yours, but are yours like for sure, or are you?
Yeah.
Okay. I think mine are for sure too. Which,
yeah, you commended me on my choices. So
okay, well then there you go.
I don't remember what they are, but they were good apparently.
Well, you know, and that's the interesting thing about doing 80s horror films is that you know, we're gonna try. What I'm basically trying to do is find movies that are 80s horror films that not. Sometimes they're the popular ones and sometimes they're the least popular ones or whatever, you know, and things. But I absolutely love doing this show because of like all the stuff we got to, you know, get to choose from, you know.
And yeah, sometimes that makes it difficult. And I actually made a concerted effort not to pick all slashers for mine for this year.
For this year.
Yeah.
Last year we had a lot more slashers.
Yeah.
And this year I think we're going to try to get, there's going to be a few, I'm sure, that get in there, but I don't even remember what I wrote down, but I have them written down. So I do know it's going to be a fun year. Mm-hmm. But I'm also trying to make sure that, because some will be indie and whatnot, I'm sure, they will not be on Indie Film Cafe. And so I'm trying to make sure that all my 80s horror films stay on 80s horror films, all my 90s horror films stay on 90s horror film podcast, and you know, everything 2000 and up and 70s and back can go on like all the other shows that we have. So we have a lot to choose from, so there you go. And we'll probably have you as a guest on other ones too, like I would love to have you for Horror Film Lovers, you know, the other show. Mm-hmm. I do. You know, that's,
yes, and I do believe that as soon as you guys do Neil Breen movies, I've already secured my place.
You've planted your flag on the Neil Breen movies.
That's right.
We've talked about that. We want to get you out to Virginia to do a Neil Breen movie, you know, when we do one, you know, think that'd be fun. This year is going to be a crazy year. We're planning to do a lot more stuff that we haven't done yet, you know, and that's what our 2022 goal is, you know, so we'll see. But anyway, to go back to Evil Dead, this is the original 1980 Evil Dead. Or was it 81? It was 80,
it's 81,
right?
The golden 81. Year of horror. I have often said if I were like 20 in 1981, I would have been at the theater in the drive-in every day.
Dude, yeah, that actually would have been a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I wonder, did people ever go to the drive-in alone? Because like the drive-in was more like a makeout place, right? You know, supposedly.
I mean, I have, but I'm a different kind of person, and it's a different kind of time too.
Yeah, but right now you would go there, and it's fine. It's completely different. In fact, there's probably a lot more people who do go by themselves because mm-hmm. COVID. You know, yeah. Right now, but I did go to my first drive-in last year, you know, and that was my first drive-in experience ever. Like, we don't have any in Virginia that I know of. If we do, I've never been there or heard of it. And so when my former roommate, her and her boyfriend wanted me to come to, you know, come watch a horror, you know, well, it was a horror films. It was weirdly enough, it was that murder mystery movie that
Knives Out.
It was Knives Out, and then funny how all I have to say is murder mystery. You pretty much know what it is if it's new, because there hasn't been really that many. And what was the other one? It was like some business one where the two girls team up to like whatever. I don't know. It was a comedy and it was funny, I guess, enough that it kept my interest and stuff. And I mean, just being there was the experience.
The whole thing with the drive-in. Sometimes the movies are kind of just background. They don't have to be great, you know?
Well,
that's why we have a lot of like drive-in classics.
Right. And that's why a lot of drive-ins were probably movies that like the B movies that nobody was planning to watch, you know?
Right. They were right. Just going it was supposed to be for the experience.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I agree. But yeah, so I would have loved to see this movie on the big screen, period. I have not yet.
I did not go when last year for the 40th anniversary, they had like a Fathom event. I think it was introduction with Bruce Campbell, maybe Sam Raimi or whatever, but yeah, you could see it on the big screen. I did not go. All those Fathom events always tend to be on like Thursday nights, and I work Monday through Friday. I can't ever do them.
I know, like was it a Riff Tracks always does it on Thursday, and
I know
all of them, and it sucks because I want to go out there and do it too, but I mean, I could, it's just, I never hear about them until like the day of, and then I'm just like, dude, like, I'm not just going to go. Like, Paul's always trying to get me to go and stuff. And I think we will, because we went to a Fathom event for The Shining, I believe. And that was pretty cool, you know, seeing The Shining on the big screen. Another 80s horror film that we could do someday.
79. So
was it 79?
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure?
Maybe even 78, actually.
I want to say it was 80. I want to say it was 19.
Maybe, but I'm pretty sure that one falls into the 70s, right? We are talking about The Evil Dead, which we did. I was on the first, ironically, because I do not like 90s horror, I was on the first 90s horror podcast episode where we talked about Jason Goes to Hell, because I'm a Friday the 13th person. So somehow I landed on that podcast. But we, for some reason, were talking about sequels or whatever, and we got on the subject of The Evil Dead, and he said that this one was his favorite. And I said, you know, I kind of circled back around and said, you know what, I'm really glad you said that, because I always say that people always say part two is superior. And objectively, yes, it is. But when it comes down to which one do I love the most, which one will I always rewatch, it is always part one. So yeah, so we decided to kind of talk about why we both appreciate part one and love part two. I'm not going to diss that movie, but there are several reasons why I prefer the first one.
I know a lot of people say Army of Darkness is their favorite, and and that is completely fine too. It's definitely, you know, each one is definitely a different step, you know.
Yeah.
Like the first one is straight horror with very little comedy. The second one is comedy and horror together.
It's almost slapstick at times. Right. It is actually slapstick at times.
Yes. Well, yeah. And that was because Sam Raimi is a huge Three Stooges fan, which this movie has a lot of slapstick to it too.
Yeah. This movie has a lot of comedy, but so I guess we can just kind of get into it.
Yep.
One of the things that I prefer of this one is the kind of lightning in the bottle type thing. It just happened to be like they made that short. They were like, hey, let's make this movie. They didn't have a lot of money. They didn't have a lot of resources. They threw something together that became wildly popular. And to me, that independent film charm, the graininess, the grittiness, the issues with sound sometimes, and all those things that, you know, because they were amateur and because they had very little money. I mean, this was not a zero budget movie, but it was very low budget. And to me, like Evil Dead 2 was like, okay, Evil Dead got popularity that they did not anticipate. And then they got attention, notoriety, and people with money paying attention. And so I always felt like Evil Dead 2 was sort of a mulligan. It was like do over. What would you, I mean, like every filmmaker dreams of that, right? You make a movie and you're like, I can't do what I want. And then someone pays me and I can remake it and do it the way I want to do it. That's the way I always felt Evil Dead 2 was. It's more polished. You know, the effects are better. The cast is like the cast is more, they're more professional. I mean, these were obviously like, you know, these were amateur actors, not right. saying that, you know, that it was like, you know, a stellar cast in part two, but it definitely, you can see a lot of the things where money changed it. And I just really like that. This is a love letter to low budget filmmaking.
Well, I mean, and to think of it like, I mean, I don't know if you know this or not. You probably do, considering you're a pretty big horror fanatic. But Joel and Ethan Coen, are one of them, I think, or both of them, edited the film as well. So
I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah. So they were good friends with the Coen brothers and helped them out with Blood Simple. And, you know, I mean, it was that kind of thing. And then, so I think it's really funny that, you know, basically helped each other. And that is just that passion of making mm-hmm. a movie finally. They had done a bunch of shorts. So for anybody who may not be familiar with like Sam Raimi's legacy and everything, he started out in college doing little short, or even in high school doing little short films. He had what was known as the Michigan Mafia, which was just a bunch of friends that got together and made films together and everything. They went off and they made a bunch of short films, and then they made a big feature film that I saw once. It was on YouTube. And I'm sad I never like ripped it off or whatever, because it was gone. Because Sam Raimi does not like any of his old stuff coming up. And I forgot the title. It was something interesting. It was basically a whodunit murder mystery kind of thing, but with like their comedy. So it was like Sam was on his knees, hands and knees, as the Peter Lorre type character. And it was just so silly. And he made these movies with his friends. And then he decided, okay, we're gonna actually make a real movie, because they tested those movies out. They tested that one film out in the theater. You know, it didn't do, it did okay. But they were like, what if we made a real movie, you know? Like, how well would that do, you know? So they ended up going and getting some money to make a little short. And they made that short that you mentioned earlier, Within the Woods, which I don't know if you've seen it or not, but it is rough.
Yeah, I've seen parts of it. I haven't seen the whole thing. I've seen like clips of it in different like commentaries and documentaries. But yeah, it's definitely proof of concept.
It's a proof of concept. Yes. Yes. They even screened it in the Walnut Lake Mall. Grocery store that Sam Raimi used to work at.
That they used for Intruder.
Yes, the same one.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, they actually screened it there, you know, and then, you know, in one of the aisles, they just brought a little thing and showed it to this investor, because they were looking for investors, and that's happened to be where they found it. So they, ended up, getting money. They made enough to make it, you know, right. And then they needed, after that was done, they needed finishing funds. So they got more money, and eventually it got out. And I don't think initially it was doing too well. It wasn't like an instant hit, you know, but it did get them an agent, and they were able to make Crime Wave, which was his next movie after that, you know, because of Evil Dead.
Well, okay. Neither of us, I mean, I was alive back then, but I was five. Neither of us were there at the time. But from what I've heard, and it's on every poster, Stephen King said this is the best movie of the year. And that helped them, I'm yes. sure.
I'm like, sure that gave them a little bit of credibility, yeah. and whatnot. Yes. So it did help. And it was interesting, because I believe there was a in the cabin that they had a poster of The Hills Have Eyes, and they right. like, you know, ripped it off. And then Wes Craven, there was like a battle between them, I think, in Nightmare on Elm Street. He did a riff to Evil Dead, and whatnot. And then, you know, they just kept kind of, you know, battling West back and forth, which I think is kind of cute. It's kind of like the rap battles.
Right, right. Like cute. Yeah, there was like just cute homages back and forth.
Yeah, which is nice. Because they, I mean, they loved The Hills Have Eyes. And that was one of the movies that actually did inspire them to, you know, to make movies. And I think Evil Dead has inspired a lot of other people.
Oh, too. Completely. I mean, if you think about all the things that Evil Dead 2, and if you go back to 81, 81 was the high point for slashers. I mean, we had what we had Friday the 13th part 2. We had The Burning. We had Madman. I mean, it was every other movie was a slasher.
Mm-hmm.
Just before Dawn came out that year. I mean, everything was a slasher. And this movie is like, is it zombies kind of? Is it like body horror kind of? Is it a slasher kind of? I mean, it's just, it defies genres. It created its own genre to me because I never think of it as, I know if you had to put it into something that, well, it really started the genre of The Cabin in the Woods.
Uh-huh.
But if you had to put it into a broad genre, I would say probably most people would say zombie.
Or but that's demon, not it. Maybe? Or
demon, demonic possession.
Demonic possession.
I don't know, but it's a little bit of everything. And it's just so unique. And the gore is great. It's, I mean, you know, just the hamburger stop motion, you know, and it's just some of that stuff that doesn't age well, but still looks kind of cool.
It looks, I hate to say it though, it kind of looks worse on 4K because like, when you build it up, when you take what already was there and then you like basically expand a little bit more, it looks cheesier, you know?
Yeah. And I've often said this too, like my biggest example of this is Friday the 13th. They just keep remastering it and just keep upscaling and upscaling and upscaling. And our TVs get better and our players get better. And Kevin Bacon's neck is not the right color. Robbie Morgan's neck prosthetic is not the right color. It's obvious. Yes, you can see hair on Mrs. Voorhees's knuckles. You can see the toothpick sticking out of her head. But those people didn't sit there and watch the dailies going, I wonder in 40 years when people have ultra 4K 3D TVs, you know, if this is going to be a problem, you know?
Like, right.
You have to go back to like, you sometimes you have to watch that stuff in older formats, VHS. I personally love CED. You have to watch that in older formats sometimes so that you remember that they used what they saw. You could say they used the lack of technology to kind of cover things. That's how we would look at it now. But I mean, they just looked at it and they're like, yeah, okay, that looks good.
Right.
And yeah.
And it did back then. Like, I mean, you know, for the movies that came out, I mean, you wouldn't notice that shit. If you watched it on beta, you know, you don't notice that crap, you know?
Right, right. Like I told you the story, I think. I watched Sleepaway Camp with two people who had never seen it before. Mm-hmm. And we're watching it on my 50-inch TV on Blu-ray, ultra 4K, blah, blah, blah. And there's a point where Judy is in her cabin and the door opens and there's kind of a shadowy figure at the door. And it's obvious now that it's the actor that plays Ricky in a wig. I mean, it is like, I mean, blatant. And I had to explain, I had to pause and explain and be like, listen, when you used to watch this on VHS, you could not tell who that was. Yeah. Like, you just couldn't, you know, but it kind of spoiled everything, you know, like, wow, that looks really stupid. But yeah, hey, but you know what? That's what we're here for.
Right, exactly.
To remind you all. To go in your way back machine.
A little bit. I mean, unfortunately, see, the thing is for movies now, we don't need that, right? Like movies in 2000s and, you know, 10s or whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you watch anything CGI from like the early 2000s, we made leaps and bounds like in the mid 2000s, like 2004, 2005, things really changed. You watch something with CGI from like 2002,
except for like Spider-Man, which was also Raimi, but like that looks really good even in 4K.
Yeah, I'm thinking a little bit more of the science fiction-y kind of stuff. Yeah, like explosions and that kind of stuff just You go back and watch that stuff and you're like, wow, that was like the coolest fucking thing that blew our minds, you know, 20 years ago. And now you watch it and you're like, oh God.
That's true. Yeah. And Evil Dead didn't really have like, I mean, of course, yeah, like we said, there's things in there that is, you know, but aside from that stuff, like the story itself, everything still holds up really well.
Right. And it's a story that we hadn't heard before. Now, okay, we had kind of, you know, kids going in the woods, whatever. But the whole like kids going on vacation, and they're not just kids, they're college students, which I always appreciate it when they're a little older. Mm-hmm. Like when they try to make
say they're older, you know, right?
Well, they're clearly older, but well, I mean, they weren't that much older, but I mean, you know, they're obviously Michigan State students. The only question I ever had is why they went sight unseen all the way to Tennessee to this cabin. Like, there's not something better in Michigan. Like, by the time you spend money on gas and everything to get there, I don't care how good of a deal it is, it's not a deal anymore. Yeah.
Well, the funniest thing about that too is I think like literally they could have called that Michigan, you know, they didn't have to say it was Tennessee, you know, or whatever,
you know, I mean, maybe that was it, maybe part of it. And again, you know, I haven't watched a lot of the commentaries and that type of stuff, but it probably was an unconscious choice anyway. But if you think about it, it adds a little bit of mystique to it because they can't just be like, okay, we'll go back down the road and talk to Sal, the guy we know. Like, they're way out of their element.
That's
like,
true.
They're states and states away. They have no idea. They don't even know who, like, he doesn't even know who he really talked to rent this place. Yeah, I mean, it's just, the atmosphere is great. And then when they get there and the porch swing is just, like, forcefully swinging as he's trying to find the key. And then it just stops. And it's like, okay, I know that I've seen a lot of movies, but at that point in time, I'd be like, nah, we're going to turn back around.
this is just
there'd be no movie for me. Yeah. Well, either that or I would try to befriend the demons.
One of my favorite scenes in the movie is the bridge crossing scene, you know, and only because I never thought about it until like maybe recently, but, you know, they're crossing that bridge and they've already at that point, they've realized, like this is trouble. Just going across this bridge, you know, like it's gonna fall or something.
It is like the literal point of no return.
Right. So they're like
we go over this, we're
not coming back
to this vacation. Yeah.
we're maybe not coming back, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so they get to there and then later they can't cross that bridge, you know, or whatever, you know. That the spirit has let, you know, has kind of taking control of everything now. Yeah. It's there. Which, by the way, the reason why, the main reason why I always pick this movie, the sound in this movie is so good. If you have like Dolby surround sound, it is creepy. Yeah, you know?
The dialogue does not always work very well. Sound wise, but the ambient sounds of the woods is and like no soundtrack, you know, you don't have a lot of like, you know, music. You get them singing their little song on the way.
You don't have like bands, but you have Joe Loduca's score, who I think he does such a great job. Paul was not happy with his score in Lunatics a Love Story, which is a movie directed produced by Sam Raimi. But I think his score in Evil Dead is just probably the best score.
It's subtle, it's minimalistic, and it's used correctly. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of times it just relies on, it's kind of like the thing in that way, that a lot of times it relies on trying to make you feel like you're there.
Right.
Just by immersing you in the nothingness that you're surrounded with.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
I
agree. That's like probably one of my favorite things about this movie.
Okay. So there is one part of this movie that still just gives me the heebie-jeebies to this day. It was done so well. Now I have problems with a few things. Like I was watching a movie the other day. It was not a good movie, but they were like, she was in a hospital and they were putting a needle in her arm. That just, oh God, that skeeves me out so bad. fingernails when people are like dragging their fingernails. But I never knew I had a problem with ankles until this movie. And when Linda gets that pencil shoved into her ankle, I mean, like, you feel it. Like, you're like, oh, God, you know, and like, now you watch it and it's like, she's got on those clogs with no socks. And like, the whole time I'm just looking at her ankle going, girl, go put on some socks, go put on some socks, go put on some tennis shoes or some boots. Come on.
Something, but good God. Yeah. That scene, mm-hmm. the ankle scene, I'll admit that, yeah. that like gets me. A lot of people talk about probably the most infamous scene is the tree rape scene, which yes. is just that scene in itself is just like, you never, I never seen anything like that before.
Yeah. Well, nobody had. And
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and it's kind of taboo. It's kind of weird. It's kind of like, just the idea that the woods are alive.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't really remember having that feeling. I think that is kind of the thing with The Hills Have Eyes, obviously, was people. But I think that was the idea with that, is that they wanted you wanted you to feel like the hills were coming after you. And with this, I think that makes sense that would be, you know, inspiration for this, because, you know, the woods were literally coming after them.
Right. Which is nuts, but it was a lot of fun.
The other scene too, that a lot of people, like, you'll see, I don't hear people talk about it as much, is just if somebody shows a clip of this movie, the card counting scene where it's like Jack of Spades, Ace of Diamonds, like, that kills me. That's awesome. And, you know, like, the makeup in this, like, when especially the girls, when they become deadites, the makeup is not great. It's really rudimentary, but it works.
Well, they didn't have, like, I don't think they had like a makeup artist. Like, you know, they definitely didn't have like Stan Winston doing, you know,
yeah.
you know what I mean? Something like that. So they had to work with what they had, and mm-hmm. they might've had a makeup person, I think, probably yeah. somebody, because I don't think they did it themselves. You know,
I do love that when Linda turns, it's like she goes into the bathroom and put like crudely, like a toddler puts on
yeah.
makeup.
It's kind of, you know, like a Harley sense. Quinn kind of thing where like, yeah. Yeah.
yeah.
I liked it. It was interesting. And then just them talking to everybody, you know, saying, you know, basically they're the demon or whatever that's out there. Which I guess, was it multiple demons, you know, that were like constructed?
So, yeah, I mean, I always thought of it as, and I don't know, I'm not huge, like, I didn't watch Ash versus the Evil Dead, like, totally. I loved the first two seasons, and then they canceled it, and I didn't watch the last season, because I was salty. but, like, I think the whole idea is, it's not a demon, it's a force. Like, right. And if I think the force is, it's not like when, you know, like Reagan is possessed by a particular demon
right.
that's speaking through her. I think that's the force is taking over that person. So that was always my impression. It was just that the force of the forest, of the Necronomicon, of that's why we were talking about this movie, because we were talking about Jason Goes to Hell, and Jason Goes to Hell is canon Evil Dead, people.
That's true. You did mention that on that, and that mm-hmm. was true, because it does have the God, I can't even say the word ever.
Necronomicon.
Yeah. I barely can ever say that word. I always yeah. don't.
The book. The Book of the Dead.
By the way, that was the original title for this film. Was Book of the Dead. That's what it was called when they were first making it, right? But the from what I've understood, the guy that was basically selling it to, you know, different buyers and everything, was like, Book of the Dead tests terribly, people think that they're gonna read for an hour and
yeah half. It sounds like too scholarly,
right? So they're like, these are the ones, and they give them a list. Forgot what the list was, but one of the lists was Evil Dead Men and Evil Dead Women, and they laughed at that. They're like, that's a silly title, but the Evil Dead doesn't sound like a terrible title, so they went with that, you know.
And I it's kind of surprising too, like, I don't know if you've watched any of the Blind Dead movies from the 70s.
I've heard of them.
They're there is one that is, you know, that's called something of the Evil Dead. So I'm guessing that's probably where these ad wizards came up with it. They were Italian movies, I think, or Spanish. So they could probably fly under the radar. But yeah.
Interestingly enough, like, didn't Dino De La Renta's have something to do with the sequel to Evil Dead and stuff? And he's Italian, so
probably. Well, the Italians were balls deep in horror, man. I tell you what,
I feel like they're not as, you know, like when you hear foreign horror these days, you think of like Korean horror is really big and whatnot now.
Yeah, but the 70s and the early 80s, like there was a lot of like mafia influence in a lot of the early 80s movies that we watched. A lot of those were financed by mob money to a certain extent. Watch the credits on any movie, like any kind of mid-budget horror movie from the early 80s, and you'll notice a lot of Gionis and Cascarellis and, you know, like just a lot of Italian names in there, just saying.
That's true, and a lot of it is because they have this money and they can use it. Why not? They have to use it. It's kind of like
movies were making money. That, I mean, like, we can't deny that. I mean, there's a reason why for a while everyone was making a natural disaster movie. No matter how good or bad it was, it would make money. It with these like horror movies in the early 80s, they made money no matter how shitty they were. They made their money back, so it was a good investment no matter what.
It makes me think about Scientology and how Scientology they need to get rid of their money, right? You know, why don't they make movies? They become a production company.
Because you saw what happened with the one that John Travolta did.
Yeah, but you know what? That was a mistake. They hire some real good, because I guarantee you Scientology has some real good.
I guarantee that Scientology funds a lot of them, like silently funds film.
The Tom Cruise
movies?
When
I say Scientology, key figures or whatever. But yeah, you're right. I mean, like when you have way too much money, you got to spend it. You know, yeah. I mean, even if you just are a business person, like even if you own a small business, you don't want to turn an actual profit. You want to invest it back in the business so you don't have to pay all the taxes on it. I mean,
exactly.
It makes sense. So, yeah.
Oh, and The Evil Dead did apparently, you know, well enough to get, you know, distributed by Anchor Bay. Then later with Sam Raimi doing... He had done Crime Wave. It did not do well. I don't know if you've seen it. I believe it's on Tubi. It is funny at times. Like, it's very slapstick. It's very Three Stooges, but it's not like, and it was co-written by the Coens. So the Coen brothers. So, I mean, it should have been better.
I will say I love Sam Raimi. I appreciate the hell out of Sam Raimi, but he does so much. He appreciates so many genres that I only tend to go towards his horror stuff.
You don't like For Love of the Game?
No.
No. A Simple Plan?
Right. That was all right. But yeah, I'm not saying it was just all right. I mean, I'm not going to go watch something just because it's Sam Raimi.
Right.
I will watch a horror movie that has to do with Sam Raimi. Now it's a lot of times he's producing it. Yeah, that's where I totally respect the fact that he likes every genre and has made a movie in just about every genre. But I really am drawn to the horror stuff. The only exception was the show Spartacus that was on Stars for a few years that he produced
that. Yeah.
That was great. That was really good.
He was the only...
That had a lot of sex. So, you know, that makes up for it. Yeah, that helps.
He was the only like celebrity that I've ever gotten starstruck, you know, like I had to be in this line waiting for, you know, to get my picture with them. And I actually felt my stomach churn like nervousness, you know, and I'm like, why am I nervous? I'm not nervous. Like meeting Robert Englund didn't make me nervous. Like, why is Sam Raimi making me nervous? And it wasn't the long line, because I had to wait a long line for Robert Englund. So I'm like thinking, has got to be something inner deeper than that. You know? Well,
yeah, because
my favorite horror film, but like that's, there's got to be more, you know.
You resonate with him. He's a filmmaker who just, he didn't start out as an actor or anything. I mean, he started out as a filmmaker who made shitty movies and for no money and ended up being a legend. And isn't that something like for somebody like you and me?
Mm-hmm.
That means so much more than, you know, meeting somebody who's just an actor on the screen.
Yeah, he was
definitely... right. Like they're inspiration for us. They're like what, like the template for like what we could be if right. we just had all the right elements.
I was hoping that I would touch him and then just all my, mm-hmm. you know, like every all yeah. of his, you know, powers, you know, got absorbed to me. But he was like, he was such a nice guy, very gracious. I told him I was a huge fan. He said, thank you. You know what I mean? Like he was very humble, like, you know, very sweet person. And I've heard that too. Like he wears suits when he goes and, you know, when he directs and because he wants to look professional, you know, like he's going to a job. I think that's freaking badass. Like, good for you, dude. You know, if you want to do that, like, you know, Anthony Michael Hall wears suits at conventions. You know, because he wants mm-hmm. to look professional. You know,
every time I've seen, I don't know if it's a thing, but every time I've seen Ted Raimi, mm. he's been wearing a suit.
Yeah, so maybe
but he's become like a convention darling too.
I've met him. Met him too. The same time I met Sam, and he wasn't like standoffish or anything. He was very nice, guy. But he wasn't as talkative as I was expecting him to be, and he didn't have a line, so I wasn't like thinking, you know, he just. It didn't seem like he wanted, like, I don't know, maybe he was just in kind of a whatever mood. But,
right.
You know, but he was very gracious, very sweet, and, you know, nice guy. So very cool to meet him, too. I like both of those guys. I'd love to see Ted in more movies, you know, as a lead, you know. I've seen him in a few times, and every time I see him as a lead, I'm like, this guy's fucking good. Why is he subjected to like supporting cast, you know?
He's always a bridesmaid kind of thing.
We watched a movie Paul and I did called The Attic Expeditions, and it starred both Jeffrey Combs and Ted Raimi in it, and together they were in like a lot of scenes together, and I was like, this is like the best duo ever. Like going crazy. I was like, oh man, Seth Green was in that movie. It was such a strange, weird movie. Good movie though. Ted Raimi is one of those people, and Sam, and Ted was in Evil Dead, but as a shimp.
So a fake shimp,
which was his,
which again is a Three Stooges reference.
Exactly, where they have to have somebody like, it was basically an extra or stand-in, you know. Ooh. Depending on the scene. So if they needed somebody to come in and fake shimp it, they would have somebody come in and do that. And I thought that was really cool that he'd brought his little brother, you know, because at that time I don't even think he was in he might have been in high school, but that's
he probably
about
was
it.
In high school,
yeah,
just age wise. But yeah, there are some, you know, if you ever have extra time or whatever, and you like listen to the commentary on this or Evil Dead 2. So I have the 4K Evil Dead 2, which is, unlike this movie, the 4K of Evil Dead 2 does look fantastic. It does. But again, they made it with a better budget. But just some of the things that they did out of necessity, like the all the animals and the lamp and everything coming to life, like basically everything in the place was a puppet of some sort.
Right.
And everybody, like the caterers, the makeup person, you know, everybody who was on set had to operate one of them to make it all work, you know, and just stuff like that. Just that, you know, if you've been on a smaller film set, just you can laugh and be like, yeah, well, I did that kind of stuff, but it didn't look as cool as that.
That's true. Like, I mean, if you think about it, like a lot, you're right. To go back to what you were saying before, is a lot of people have probably wanted to take like their first movie that wasn't like wasn't as good as they were hoping it would be and remake it now. Even Tarantino has talked about that, how he would love to remake Reservoir Dogs, which I think would be a travesty. Like, don't do that. Don't do that because Reservoir Dogs, unlike a lot of other people's first films, is fucking good. You know,
yeah.
A lot of people's first films suck. And even my first film, Scary Story Slumber Party, even though I love it because it's my first feature film, it's not nearly as good as I would. You know, there's things there right. that I'm just like, and when reviewers go, and I bet Sam Raimi feels the same way, when people go, oh, that looks terrible, or why did they do that? You know, they look back and they, you know, I'll look back and I'll go, well, you know what, if you had given me more money, I could, right. you know, or, you know, if
and
I
that's,
had-
and that's the way I am with the Embalmers. I like look, I'm like, well, originally this is what I wanted to do, but I did like 1/100th of that with this particular thing. I mean, you're always going to have those. I mean, even I think if you make like a, even if you make like a mid-budget movie, I think you're always going to run into that. Mm-hmm. You know, now if you're like a Michael Bay or something, be like, you know, go rob another leprechaun because we need another explosion.
Like, right.
Like, but you know, anything where you have some kind of limited budget or a cap, you're probably going to look at stuff and be like, well, we wanted to do this, but what we could afford was this.
Right.
And- so I get it. But Reservoir Dogs was mostly, it was very dialogue heavy, very, very much an actor driven movie. And the actors were fantastic and the dialogue was fantastic. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's no real reason to remake that movie.
Cause like, what would you do? Like, cause he was talking about that as like, that was a potential last film of his would be to remake that. That's like a thought in his head. And I was like thinking, would you like show the heist? Because like part of the charm is not seeing the heist, you know?
Like, yeah. Or would, I mean, or is he talking about, yeah. Cause you can't really do like a continuation and, you know, what are you going to like, how are you going to recast Harvey Keitel? You know, like that kind of thing, like those, that movie put a lot of people on the map. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, yeah. Don't recast him. Don't recast any of those actors. All those actors were perfect for those roles. And
yeah, so it's just, and again, that lightning in a bottle thing. Don't try to recreate something. Which again, I was surprised. I mean, I'm not surprised, but I feel like that's what they did with Evil Dead 2. And again, I have nothing but love for Sam Raimi. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of things you could see that, like the bridge you were talking about. Okay. So then the bridge falls out and they can't go across it. Well, in part two, the bridge is like curled up and all tangled, like huge, you know, model and everything. And you could see he was like, well, that's what I wanted to do with the bridge, but I didn't have the money to do it.
Right.
That kind of thing. You could see that throughout that whole movie where he's like, well, this is what I wanted to do, but I couldn't.
I hate to say it, but Sam Raimi is a much more visual director than Tarantino. He does have great visuals.
It's about the dialogue. It isn't even about the story. 90% of the time, the story is kind of superfluous in a lot of Tarantino's stuff.
Tarantino, it goes dialogue and then feet, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just Tarantino, if you're listening to this, sorry.
He's not listening to us. So here's a question that I have that there is no answer to.
Right.
You know, it's been thrown out there. So the first movie, we have the five kids going to this cabin, you know, and of course it centers kind of around Ash and Linda, his girlfriend. And, you know, kind of their romance, and he gives her that ugly ass fucking necklace. Oh, whatever. That was so not worth. It's a magnifying glass or something. What the hell? But then when you get to part two, it's just Ash and a girl named Linda. Okay, I'm going to start with that. She's just a girl named Linda, not the same actress. Mm-mm. Okay. Same car, but not the same actress, same cabin. Okay. We even have some similarities in what happens in the beginning of that. It's kind of almost, it's almost a recap of part one, but it's enough different stuff to where you have to question, is this another girl named Linda? And is he bringing her to this cabin to do the same thing? Or are we watching a recap, but then it's totally different because you only have two characters instead of five. And then in Army of Darkness, we have, just very briefly, Bridget Fonda is a girl named Linda that he, you know, that when he gets back to the SMART or whatever he's, you know, he's with. And I didn't watch the end of Ash versus Evil Dead, but I have heard that in the last season, he has a crush on or a romance with a Black woman whose name is Linda, like to drive the point home that this is not Linda from the first one. Are these four different Lindas?
Yeah, I want to say that now we're starting to get into like a multiverse territory,
right? And this is the kind of stuff that you will not find a definitive answer on, right, from anybody who is involved. You know, like even if you listen to the commentary, yeah, like that's I think Bruce was the one who said, yeah, I mean, what does he just bring these girls back to this cabin? All these girls named Linda, you know, right. And maybe that's where it started.
Well, maybe there was like, yeah, maybe there's some kind of joke there where,
yeah,
they thought, because if you think about it, so I say multiverse. So it's like, you know, each one is in a separate universe, right? It's kind of like how Sam Raimi's directing a movie called Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, the new Marvel movie. But what basically is like, so Evil Dead 1 set in this one universe, Evil Dead 2 set in a completely different universe, but with the same, with Ash is the only, you know, and then third one,
Ash
still
could be in some kind of like fugue state where he just keeps, like a Groundhog Day thing, yeah, where he has to keep going back to the cabin and the only thing that stops it is going back in time or something. I mean, and that's not far off. Okay, the end of this one, which I would say, Army of Darkness, I've seen it a couple times. It's not my genre. I'm not into like middle age stuff. I understand. I appreciate what they were trying to do. However, if that had come out, because what Evil Dead 2 was what, 82, 83, something like that. And then Army of Darkness came out in 1990, a very long time after. If they hadn't thrown in the stuff at the end of Evil Dead 2, of, you know, the car and everything else, yeah, going back and him landing in medieval times, I would have been like, wow, you guys were really grasping at shit. But the fact that they already set it out there, like, this is what we're going to do if we do another one. Yeah. Here we go. Like, this is it, you know?
I bet they didn't know if they were going to do another one or not, you know?
Oh, probably not. They probably didn't know, but it, you know, whatever, go balls to the wall. I mean, if you don't make another one, who cares? Then Ash is always forever in medieval times, right?
Right,
I mean,
yeah. And then he's stuck there, yeah, in limbo. I was watching a movie yesterday, a really good one. Then I interviewed the director of it. It's a movie called Christmas Cancellation. It's basically what would happen if fictional characters realized that they were real, like, or whatever, and they were stuck on a show that they knew were going to get canceled, so they were gonna die, you know. And finally they have a life, but now they know, oh crap, we're gonna die, kind of thing,
right?
Thought it was amazing. If you haven't seen it, it's on Tubi.
That sounds like a great concept.
Yeah, and it's a drama. It's got comedy in it, but it's a drama, and it's done by the guys who did Ninjas versus Vampires and Ninjas versus Monsters and whatever, bunch of great like movies made in Maryland. Anyway, that movie started making me think, like, you know, when a character dies in a movie, or not dies in a movie, but like is like suffers at the end of a movie, but they set it up for a sequel, but you never get it. Poor right. character, you know,
like, right? What? Are they just stuck in that, like, Final Girls? I'm sure you've seen that.
Oh one. Yeah. Oh, that's gonna be in Horror Film Lovers at some point.
Oh, I love that movie, but it's like the fact that they throw it in at the end, that like you think it's all over, but then they're stuck in the sequel, yeah, and now there's not been another one made. So yeah, as far as we know, those characters are still stuck in part two.
Oh yeah, I know, they're because I'm so really mad. So I was out in LA and I was doing these, when I was in LA, I was doing these, what is it? What are they called? you know, where the screenings, you know, and helping out with these screenings. And there's a screening for a movie called Silent Retreat, which I don't think has come out yet, directed by the guy who did Final Girls. And unfortunately, I was like thinking, is this Silent Retreat or is this Final Girls 2? You know, sometimes titles, they don't have the real titles or whatnot.
Yeah, that's
right. I don't know. It hasn't come out yet.
Especially when they're trying to test them, but.
Yeah. So who knows? I was working the screening. I didn't get to watch the movie.
You know?
Yeah. Which made me mad because like they got like gift cards and all this other shit. And I'm like, I would love to get like gift cards to watch a fucking movie. Like, you know, I gotta look up where, when I go back out there, I'm looking that shit up. it was cool. And I had a fun time doing it. Apparently I can't say anything about it, like even publicly.
Yeah, or whatever, NDA because, kind of thing.
Yeah, kind of thing, because they're very secretive about how they do their stuff. But it was really cool. Like, it was neat. And I got to see the director, you know, of Final Girls, which made me go crazy. I wanted to walk up to him because I found out who he was. And I was like, I wanted to walk up to him and say something, but I was like, shh, Jonathan, just.
Yeah, like, this know, is his like, night, man.
Yeah, let him be. You
You're
know.
One of hundreds of fans. Just,
I'm sure. Yeah. Just let it go. But it's all good. It was fun. But go back to Evil Dead. So like, there's so many things, like him getting trapped there. They had never made a sequel. We just would have just assumed, okay, he's kind of just stuck in medieval times. Who knows?
Yeah. And the with the first one, another thing that kind of goes with this theory of like he's somehow stuck in a loop or whatever. I mean, he's nutso in the second one. Like, he starts out just, I mean, not when he's there with his Linda 1 or Linda 2, we don't know. But like, I mean, he instantly just goes to that like insane asylum kind of attitude. So is it like, oh wow, I thought it was gonna be different this time, well I guess not, oh, you know. Like, so it's just fun to think about those things, and this is the kind of universe where you can think about that stuff,
right? And I need to watch Evil Dead 2 again. Like I said, Evil Dead 1 is my favorite, so I watched that most out of all the stuff. Army of Darkness I've seen a few times, but maybe because it's too comedic, it throws me off a little bit, you know. Like, I kind of don't like it, you know. It's just too like,
yeah,
too many one-liners, you know, and stuff. And I'm just like, I don't want Ash to be like that, you know, because
And I'm fine with Ash being like that, but it just takes me out of it. Like I said, that's just not my genre.
Yeah,
my time period, my genre, I just don't really get into that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like I said, but I appreciate that they were like, well, fuck it, let's see what's gonna happen here. You know, this is something that's hundreds or thousands of years old. Well, yeah, then why wouldn't he be sucked into some origin shit?
Why not? The original title was not Army of Darkness for that; it was Medieval Dead, and I'm like,
That's
a great title, isn't
that's
it?
That's a great title.
That's a great pun, like, you know,
play
on the words on there. And so it kind of sucks that they went with the Army of Darkness, but they probably tested Medieval Dead. And,
yeah, people probably are like, oh. I mean, it does really make you roll your eyes.
Well, no, I think more people were probably, when they heard Medieval Dead, they thought medieval times, and they probably didn't like necessarily draw them in.
It is alienating to the horror people.
Right.
That it doesn't, like, it's like, oh, now it's just medieval, which, and that's what I focus on. And yes, it focuses on deadites and everything else. It's just the time period that it's set in. So if you say medieval, yeah, Army of Darkness sounds more all encompassing. People who never watched any of the Evil Dead movies probably watched it because it looked like something that they were interested in, you know.
Interestingly enough, there was a series of films, like a trilogy of films called the Dorm Days series. I don't know if you ever heard of them, but it was a Natural Lampoon. And
I think I've seen the first one.
Yeah, so Dorm Days 1, and then there's Dorm Days 2, Semester at Sea. Third movie doesn't even have Dorm Days on the title at all. only because Dorm Days 2 did not do well, and they'd already been greenlit to do a third one. So they decided to just call it Translamania.
Well, and then you have the opposite. So then you have, which recently, it's Christmas time, recently did all the Silent Night, Deadly Nights for a podcast, reluctantly. But like you get to like Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 4, which was Brian Yuzna basically making Society Part 2. And then, but they slapped the Silent Night, Deadly Night name on it, which it had nothing to do. I mean, there was like a Christmas tree. It took place in December. You know, it's about it, you know? So yeah, you have a lot of those things where, you know, people want to jump into a franchise or they want to jump out of a franchise, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever. That's not our job. So
I know it's just weird. It's always weird to see like when a sequel becomes something else, you know, or whatever, or takes a different turn. I mean, when you did Friday 13th after 8, when New Line bought it, it became Jason.
Right.
You know,
right. Because it had to. And just like that Child's Play had to become Chucky because just of rights issues. And, you know,
does that mean that Nightmare on Elm Street will be just Freddy? Like, because I know they did Freddy's Dead, the final Nightmare, but
it still was Nightmare. Yeah. I don't know. I think that's a dead horse. Honestly, that's not my franchise. I love 1. I love 3. I like 4. I like 2. I like New Nightmare kind of, I kind of dig that, but that's not my franchise. And they've just tried to go so many different places with it that I just don't. I
never
did
Freddy in space, and I'm very sad. You know, if they can go Jason in space, they need to go Freddy in space. Just saying. Yes, Leprechaun in space.
Yeah, you know,
critters in space.
But that's what I always say. I have no problem with the in space thing. It was just when they sent Jason in space. That's really my only problem with the space thing.
That's true.
Freddy in space, I might get behind that one.
Might. I mean, what can he do though? Like, because do people dream in space? I guess. I mean, would that be
maybe
the thing?
Okay. I mean, he could be maybe some of the Elm Street children became astronauts.
Right. Yeah, why not?
Come on. You give somebody enough cocaine, they'll come up with something. Cocaine and money is what fuels sequels, everybody.
I would watch 100%. Freddy in space. I'm just saying. I don't know. And then, but see, I like in space movies. When Sharknado went to space, I got excited. I mean, I love that shit because it's just fun. It's like at that point, they've jumped the shark already. Jaws hasn't even gone to space yet. That's phenomenal.
No, but they went to SeaWorld, which is just
they went to Miami or rather they went to Florida. And you know,
they went to SeaWorld. Yeah.
Like, well, no, I mean, they went down to Florida before too, or what? The Bahamas or something. They went to for the fourth one. He's just not going to go to Amity anymore. Amity's done.
Yeah. Like nobody's swimming at that place anymore.
Right. Yeah. Everybody, the mayor has kicked everybody out. Or whatever by then. I mean, after you've seen like a couple shark attacks there, you think they'd really would close the beach down and say, you know, it's probably not safe.
Yeah. You know? I mean, and the people you would think would be like, okay, it's not the nicest beach. I mean, that the town is cute and everything, but it looks really like kind of just murky and dark. Yeah. And it's not the prettiest like beach. Like, why don't you guys just go down 10 miles to, you know, some other touristy kind of beach?
Definitely.
And they all cram into that one little like area too, which, okay. A whole other movie.
That is, oh my goodness.
A whole other franchise.
All right. So It's Murder was the name of the movie that Sam Raimi directed in the beginning of his career. Like it was a feature length hour and 10-minute movie. I would love for that to go on YouTube again. It's just Sam Raimi is not happy with his old, you know, films or whatever. Yeah. He doesn't want people thinking that of him, I guess, you know, but like,
I think just for legacy, just for posterity or something. I feel like,
it's fun to look back, I think, sometimes and see where somebody's came from.
And this is history too. I mean, you have to kind of see, yes, where somebody's come from, or, you know, what was going on at the time. There are a lot of things that people try to censor now that they're like, well, this isn't appropriate for this time. Well, okay, but maybe it was appropriate for the 40s or the 50s or whatever, and it was relevant. And, you know, so it's like, you know, film tends to tell history a lot better than history books. And yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that whatever Sam Raimi did for Evil Dead when he was in college is like, you know, historical, like, I don't know, whatever, but it is, in a way, if you want to think about the progression of his career and his vision, you know, it is kind of a little piece. I think that, yeah, I think we need to see Sam. Sorry.
Yep. So real quick, I'm going to get into a little bit of trivia that I just read of The Evil Dead. Bruce Campbell put up his family's property in Northern Michigan as collateral.
Yes. So that's his Sam mom, Raimi. Actually, his mom let him do it.
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. Not only could finish the film, but also blow it up to 35 millimeter, which was a requirement for theatrical release. Raimi was so grateful for this financial contribution, he credited him as co-producer. At the end of a normal, and I don't know if that's necessarily exactly right. I think he was already a co-producer because Bruce was doing a lot of work. If you read the book,
well,
The Kids Could Kill,
yeah,
he was doing a lot of stuff to help, you know, to get investors.
Well, maybe he had him like as an associate producer, and then he made him like full-blown producer.
Yeah, maybe. At the end of a normal day of shooting, Bruce Campbell would return home in the back of a pickup truck because he was covered in fake blood from head to toe. All right.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
We've all been there.
I remember I was with an actress. We'd just finished shooting. She was covered in blood, and we went to Denny's or IHOP.
Yeah, I haven't been covered in blood and gone out to eat, but yeah, I've definitely had, you know, wounds from a shoot, and I'm like, fuck it, let's go to Taco Bell.
my favorite thing ever was I was in a car with a cop who was a director, and we got pulled over. I guess I don't know if he was speeding or if there was something, you know, whatever. He got pulled over. And he had a bunch of, you know, weapons.
Body.
In the back.
Oh, I was going to say body parts.
Well, like bloody weapons and stuff. And he had to explain to the cop, first of all, I'm a cop, you know, and he blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And also I'm a filmmaker. So when you check the trunk, you're going to see a lot of, you know.
Yeah. A lot of suspect-looking stuff.
So the guy checked his trunk and saw that stuff. And then he started asking him about, you know, the filmmaking stuff, and cops love that shit. I don't know if you realize this, but like, you know, at least around here and other places I've been, they're fascinated by filmmakers, you know. I think
a lot of people are, you know. I mean, if you go to New York or you go to California, I mean, everybody's a filmmaker, even like maybe Florida, Atlanta, that kind of stuff. But like anywhere else, being a filmmaker, as shitty as a filmmaker as you want to be, the fact that like you make movies or that you act in movies is intriguing to some people. Like, oh, okay. Cause everybody kind of thinks they come from like Chicago, LA, New York. Every movie comes from that. Even the shitty movies. Cause you know, like you think back to the '80s, even like the worst porn came out of LA.
Right.
You know,
right.
It wasn't being made in Oklahoma. Like Now it is. Yes. The best porn is probably being made in Oklahoma. but yeah, like I had an appointment with my psychiatrist the other day, and like it, you know, I'm just like, yeah, I'm cool. Just write me my scripts. Whatever. He's just like, so how's the movie thing going? Do you have any good roles lately? Blah, blah. He's like, I'm not a horror fan, but I just find that really intriguing. And I'm like, wait, I'm paying you, dude. And I'm trying to get out of here in 5 minutes. And you just want to ask me about movies.
Nice.
Like, no. Let's flip the billing here. But I think people are just intrigued whether they want to watch them or not. I think they're intrigued by the fact that you're involved.
Like when I first found out Clerks was in New Jersey and, you know, like this dude put up like $27,000 of his own, you know, like that fucking intrigued me and shit, you know?
Yeah. And that was kind of me too. Like when I started actually, you know, cause I've always been drawn to low budget horror. So when I started like watching some of these movies and I realized I could like get on Instagram and like follow, not even follow, like just, I could message, like private message some of these directors and they were like right there. Watch, and they'd watch it with me and everything else. I'm like, wait, that's cool. Like you're just some dude in like Ohio. Oh yeah. You've got to get up tomorrow and go to your job, you know, university or whatever. And like, I didn't get it. And then, you know, once you get into it a little bit, you realize, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was the same thing with me with MySpace, you know, cause like back then when I started doing my interviews back in 2006, I went on MySpace and I just started contacting these guys saying, would you like to be on my show? Right. These independent filmmakers, and that I loved. Some of them were getting stuff in like fucking Blockbuster, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was just intrigued. I was like, oh man, you got to come on my show and talk about this. And they're like, yeah, you know, and I've had a lot of luck with that, you know? And
yeah. I was surprised. There have been I haven't like shot for the stars, but there've been very few people. I mean, I can only think of like two maybe who never responded to me. Yeah. Cause I mean, people want to talk about their stuff.
Neil Bree never responded to me, sadly.
Are you okay? So my friend Sam Benisi, who is actually my director of photography for the Embalmers, he somehow, and I still don't know how, he somehow got Neil Breen's phone number. He recorded himself. He and his friend Jesse, they decided one night they were going to call him. And they called Neil Breen. And Neil Breen answered. And Sam's like, hi, I'm a filmmaker and I just wanted to get some advice from you. And he said, oh, my advice would be don't make movies. Then he laughed. And he sat there and talked to him. I mean, some random guy that had his phone number, who knows how, he did sit there and talk to him for like 10 or 15 minutes. He was super cool.
I have something interesting to tell you after the okay. podcast, because I can't share it publicly, but there's something I can share with you. Aside from that, I think we're at the end. You know, it's been an hour, or a little over an hour, which is awesome. Like
we've talked about like 10, 12 different movies and franchises. Well,
I mean, isn't that like normal of eighties horror films? Cause like, I mean, I love talking about the movie, but I mean, you sort of go down a rabbit hole when you're talking about these movies.
There are many.
Yeah. So there you go. But this movie was great. I mean, it's my favorite horror film of all time. Anybody ever asked what's your favorite horror film? I don't know. Like maybe someday it'll change, you know, but so far there's not been one movie that's knocked it out yet, you know? Mm-hmm. And I love horror. So it's just up there. Like it's up there with Scream and Friday the 13th Part 8, which, you know, a lot of people hate, you know, but I love. So I'm sure we'll talk about it on 80s horror films. If it's not maybe on the list this season, it'll be on the list next season. So I don't think we've done it yet. Not yet. Because I wasn't trying to do the popular ones in the beginning, you know.
Well, that's not incredibly popular, but yeah, it's a fun one to talk about.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I guess it's not incredibly popular. It's popular to hate. You know, which I mean,
yeah, I think that's turning though.
I think so too. I think, you know,
I think it's getting a little bit of Part 5 or like Halloween 3 kind of status. It's starting to get there.
I don't know. Which Part 5 Marie, did you say?
Friday Part 5.
Friday.
People hated on forever. Now people love it. Halloween 3, people used to shit on and now they love it.
But so those have two. Those two have one specific reason, because there's no real Jason in Part 5 and there's no Michael Myers in part three.
But Part 8, yeah, there are many reasons to hate it that are becoming reasons to love it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we'll talk about that.
We'll talk about that sometime. I'm sure. But thank you. Thank you, Rebecca. This has been fun. We'll be back next month. It'll be your pick. So we can't say anything until.
So I'm going to have to dig out my picks so that I can pick one.
See, I would look up our conversations, but we've talked.
We talked too much.
We talked too much. That's well, no, I don't, maybe this for the last couple of months, I'll you've find been busy. It. You've been busy. So yeah. I haven't really been bothering you that much with stuff.
I can find it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we can find it. Yeah, there you go. I have my list here down here. And so anyway, thank you so much. Stick around. I'll chat with you after. But everybody else, thank you guys for listening. Tune in next month where it'll be Rebecca's pick. And who knows what we're going to be listening to or talking about. You know. All right. Thank you guys. Bye.
Bye.